Well, what do you make of Jesus? He's a fascinating character. Most people today don't want to dismiss him too quickly. He's a big figure in history. He's impacted the world in more ways than you could list. But at the same time, many people want to keep him at arm's length. Jesus may be interested. He did some amazing things, but let's not get too involved. Let's not get so enthusiastic about him that our friends wonder if we're still English. Of course, it all depends who Jesus is. Matthew has been showing us Jesus' authority. In chapters 8 and 9 of his gospel, we've had a string of pretty amazing miracles. Last week, we saw the most dramatic of them all. We watched Jesus bring the dead back to life. Twice, if you were here, you'll remember. And peppered in between those miracles are some very powerful stories where Jesus calls people to follow him, to give up being in control of their lives and to let him take charge. Well, now these chapters are drawing to a close. And in today's passage, Matthew wraps up. He's got two final miracles for us. He only tells us the stories quickly. He's not so much focused now on the miracles themselves as on the two questions he wants to ask us. Who do we think Jesus is? And how are we going to respond to him? So we're going to have two headings as we look at these verses together, looking at those two searching questions. Who is Jesus? What is our response? First, then, Jesus is the Messiah, not a magician. Jesus is the Messiah, not a magician. As I started to study this passage, I thought this was going to be quite hard to preach on. How do you follow last week? We've had a lot of miracles in these chapters, and raising the dead was the climax. You don't get better than that. When people come to this country to hold huge rallies for thousands of people, when they claim people will be healed, generally one that they do not publicize they're going to achieve is the dead being raised. It feels like a bit of an anti-climax to follow that with Jesus curing two blind men and one man who couldn't talk. If Matthew is trying to sell us Jesus' authority, why didn't he quit when he was ahead? But then you look at what Matthew's saying. He's not really drawing our attention to the miracle itself. He's not saying, you've seen Jesus raising the dead, now here's something even more dramatic, you'll like this one. His focus is now on who Jesus is. We've seen many miracles. Take a step back, he says. Ask yourself what all this tells you about him. And to help you think about that, here are two more stories. The first clue as to what's going on comes as the blind men call out for help. Verse 27, have mercy on us, son of David. Son of David, it's an unusual name for Jesus. It's also highly loaded. David was the greatest king that Israel had ever known, reigning for 40 years around about 1000 BC. God had promised David that he would raise up another king for his people, descended from David, like David, only greater. This one would rule and bless the whole world, and this one would reign forever. And the Jewish people were waiting for this promised son of David. Matthew opens his gospel in chapter 1 by telling us that Jesus is the one. First, he records Jesus' family tree. He draws the line from David to Jesus. The angel addresses Joseph as Joseph, son of David. Jesus is a son of David, but is he the son of David? We have to wait to find out until at last, Matthew chapter 9, verse 27, the blind men call out, have mercy on us, son of David. But how do we know if they're right? After all, they're blind and they can't see. What would they know? More than everybody else, it turns out. As the years passed from the great King David, God told his people more and more what the promised son of David would do. For example, let's turn, if you don't mind turning a few pages, to Isaiah chapter 35. It's on page 720. Page 720, Isaiah 35. Okay, Isaiah 35, verse 5. Then will the eyes of the blind be opened, and the ears of the deaf unstopped. Then will the lame leap like a deer, and the mute tongue shout for joy. Come back to Matthew's Gospel. If you're wise, you left a finger in the page. In fact, to Matthew chapter 11, page 976. There we find John the Baptist wondering exactly this. Is Jesus the promised one who was coming? Verse 2, when John, who was in prison, heard about the deeds of the Messiah, he sent his disciples to ask him, "Are you the one who is to come, or should we expect someone else?" And Jesus replied, "Go back and report to John what you hear and see. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is proclaimed to the poor." That list of miracles almost exactly matches Matthew chapters 8 and 9. In other words, Jesus sends the messengers back to John's prison cell. Go and tell John the miracles that Matthew will later write down in chapters 8 and 9 of his gospel. That will answer his question. And it will answer his question because it lines up exactly with what Isaiah said the promised king would do. The Jews gave a title to the son of David that they were waiting for. They called him the Messiah. These last two miracles complete the set. Isaiah had said what the Messiah would do, and now Matthew has recorded these. He's shown us that Jesus is the Messiah. These miracles do not just give us Jesus the magician, they give us Jesus the Messiah. Jesus is the Messiah, not a magician. This is not an anticlimax at all. This is the final piece in the puzzle. Imagine you're doing a jigsaw puzzle. Picture what you like, 24 pieces, if you end up mainly helping other people with jigsaw puzzles, or 1,000 if you're lucky enough to have the time on your hands to do such things on your own. You have one last piece or section to do. It's a little bit of blue sky. You've left it till last because it's the trickiest bit to put together. It's all blue. Not terribly dramatic, to be honest. But what a great feeling once it's done. The whole picture is there. It's finished. You can see the whole thing. Some scenes in that picture were quite dramatic details. A fire blazing here. Someone's church hall is on fire. And a 10-foot wave over there with some surfers. Quite how they fit in the same picture, I don't know. It must be a church hall by the sea. And those were the fun bits of the puzzle to do. But nothing beats the satisfaction of putting in that last piece. Now you can see what you're looking at. These last two miracles may not be the most dramatic miracles in Matthew chapters 8 and 9, but they do complete the picture. Now we can see what we're looking at. Jesus, the Messiah. And this is so exciting, because the Messiah would come and fix the whole world. So much in this world is sad or spoilt. The book of Isaiah ends with the Messiah bringing this world to a perfect state, with no crying, with no death, with no illness, nothing sad, untrue or spoilt. If the Messiah has come, then so will that. I've got a hazy childhood memory of waiting to see someone famous. I can't remember who. It wasn't the Queen. And I can't remember what they were coming to do either. But I can remember one thing. Some smart... Well, hold on a minute. I think probably at school, waiting. Some smart car drove past. And we all cheer and wave. Only for it to fade as we slightly disappointedly realise that we've just cheered on a complete stranger who happened to have a black car that had been through the car wash recently. Now, of course, if the Queen were to come to open a new hospital, a new school, a new swimming pool even, that would have been good, wouldn't it? It's exciting when she gets there, because it means the building can open. The hospital can serve the community. The children can use the pool, or whatever it is. The Jewish people were waiting for their Messiah. Many of them still are, even today. Matthew doesn't want us waving and cheering at the wrong car, so he spends two chapters showing us a hand-picked set of miracles, all the things the Messiah would do when he came. These miracles aren't just random displays of power. Jesus is the one that they were waiting for, which means that everything he came to accomplish can now happen. And that is good news for people of every age. Jesus is the Messiah, not a magician. Well, that's Matthew wrapping up who Jesus is. He also wants to draw together his challenge to us to respond to Jesus. So here's our second heading. Jesus is to be trusted as unique, not dismissed as a freak. Jesus is to be trusted as unique, not dismissed as a freak. Matthew often records how people responded to Jesus. It's one way that he invites us to consider how we will respond. And in this passage, we see both good and bad responses. Take the good responses first. We have the blind men. Verse 28, when he had gone indoors, the blind men came to him. And he asked them, "Do you believe that I am able to do this?" "Yes, Lord," they replied. We've seen people's trust shine through before. The dead girl's father believed Jesus could raise her back to life. Jesus said he'd never seen anyone in Israel with faith like that centurion. But Jesus expects even more from these blind men, and they step up to the plate. He won't heal them until they tell him that they believe he can. There are no other miracles in Matthew's gospel where Jesus requires faith before he will heal. And they do. And there's one positive response. The crowd gives us another, verse 33. The crowd was amazed and said, "Nothing like this has ever been seen in Israel. This is absolutely unique," they say. And they're quite right. God had promised only one Messiah, and that's Jesus. So of course these things had never been seen before. They've never been seen before, or indeed since. Some animals in the world are perilously close to extinction. In January of this year, a northern white rhino died at a zoo in San Diego. And that leaves the total in the world now of five. The only hope to save the entire species rests, so I'm told, with rhinoceros IVF. That is something about which I know nothing at all. If you were in the wild, however, and you knew your stuff, just imagine if you spotted a rhino. You know how to tell black and white rhinos apart. That's easy. And if you don't know, ask me later, I will tell you. But you manage to get closer and you discover that every single one of the distinguishing marks of a northern white rhino are present. That must mean there is one left in the wild after all. And this must be it. You get help to make sure that it gets the very best care. You certainly don't write it off as a southern white rhino in fancy dress, hoping it will get special treatment, and so shoot it for the cheek of it. Here's Jesus. He's the Messiah, and the crowds are amazed. We've never seen anything like this. Here is the unique one that God had promised to rescue the world. Wow, he is utterly unique. No one like him. good responses. But not everyone responds to Jesus as they should do. That's the case today, and it was the case in Jesus' own day. Some people try and shoot the rhino. Meet the Pharisees, verse 34. The Pharisees said, "It is by the prince of demons that he drives out demons." Notice how the Pharisees are in no doubt whatsoever that Jesus had miraculous power. They make no attempt to discredit Jesus' miracles. It's striking that in modern times, some skeptics, and even a few theologians who ought to know better, try to argue away some of Jesus' miracles. That didn't really happen. Feeding the 5,000? Nah. Everyone had a pat lunch in their bag and they just got it out when the boy got his out. Obviously not. See, back in Jesus' day, even Jesus' opponents didn't try that one. Everyone could see that the miracles of Jesus were absolutely extraordinary and beyond dispute. No, the issue is where Jesus' power came from. What was behind the miracles? What do the miracles say about Jesus as a person? Many people today say, if only I had been there to see Jesus perform his miracles, I'd believe in him for sure. The trouble is that doesn't work. Plenty of people who were there saw everything. They knew Jesus had raised the dead and healed the blind, but did they believe him? No. They found other ways to explain what they saw. The Pharisees dismissed Jesus as demonic, as outright evil. Jesus has some amazing superpowers, and those powers must come from the devil. Jesus gets to reply to that charge when they accuse him of it again in chapter 12. People today don't dismiss Jesus in quite the same way. I don't hear people saying that he is evil. But people do still want to find some way to explain his miracles, any way to explain his miracles, other than him being the historically unique rescuer of the world. Perhaps the most common thing I hear is that Jesus was just a good teacher. Some of Jesus' teachings were pretty memorable, turn the other cheek, that kind of thing. Oh, and he also did a few miracles, I'll concede that point. But I try not to think about them too hard. That won't wash. He's much, much more than a miracle-working teacher. He's the unique Son of God. He's the one who lived, died, and rose again to save the world and to rescue everyone in the world who will trust and follow him. At one point, UNICEF was well on the way to eradicating polio worldwide. They had to stop in 2005 because of so many new cases of polio in Nigeria. The rumour was spreading that the polio vaccine was a deliberate Western ploy. The vaccine would sterilise every child who was inoculated. In Pakistan, nurses were chased out of villages by angry mobs who thought the vaccine was an attempt to stem the spread of Islam. In Kenya, some parents thought that the devil was behind this vaccine and that any children who received the oral vaccine would magically lose their tongues. So sad. Here is a vaccine that clearly works. And yet, what's the agenda behind it? It's a bit suspicious. Why does it work? What are you really saying yes to if you allow your child to be vaccinated? Here is Jesus. Amazing miracles. Everything the scriptures said the Messiah would do. Nobody could deny the things that have been happening. And yet many did not believe in Jesus. It's a ploy of the devil, they said. There's amazing power at work here, that's for sure. But how do you know it's good? Or to quote one modern author, never trust any power where you cannot see where it keeps its brain. And in the same way, many people today see the wonderful things that Jesus did on earth, but they're far too suspicious to follow him. They won't trust him. We're nearly at the end of Matthew chapters 8 and 9. One more little section to come on May the 10th. Matthew's drawn together this wonderful demonstration of Jesus' authority. He's asking us, who do you say Jesus is? And what is your response? Jesus did amazing miracles. He gave the blind their sight. That's beyond dispute. The question is, what does it show us about him? He's not a magician. He's the Messiah. Many people dismiss him. Some say these miracles never happened, although that's pretty obviously not true. Others just draw back from making any big conclusions about Jesus, dismiss him as a freak. But there is another possibility. We can trust him as utterly unique and totally wonderful. These miracles show Jesus to be the one and only rescuer of the whole world. There has never been anyone like him, and there never will. And seeing that, we come to Jesus. We follow him. He makes us whole again. He starts to do that now, and he'll finish the job, I guarantee, when he returns to make the whole world new and better.